Alistair Greenhill sitting with Ofer Catling on the 10th of June at his home on the Isle of Skye. Ofer, if you could start just by giving me your full name, date of birth and where you were born.
Yes, Ofer William Catling. After Ofer, they thought I needed a plonking name. And I was born on 1925, March the 23rd, at Leicester City Maternity Home, Westcote Drive. I can't remember much about that.
Do you remember anything of your home? I don't know how long you lived at that address.
The first thing I really remember is living in Loughborough, Shelthorpe Road, Loughborough. We lived near the, I think it was the A6. And my father called, telling me one day, he says, come into the, up to the bedroom. And he lifted me onto the bedroom windowsill and said, look, there's the airship. It was the R-101, I think, going to Cardington on one of its brief, all too brief test flights. I was about, must have been about 1930, because it crashed in Beauvais on October the 4th that year. A designed, tragic event that was. As school years. And we moved closer into Loughborough, and I went to the Rosebery Street School, Loughborough, and I found the same school on Google Earth, and it looks exactly the same, except it's slightly extended. But I remember walking to school one day and telling a teacher that the bell that was ringing in the tower was shaking the tower. And of course, that stopped the bell ringing. Yeah.
And, did they stop the bell for always, or did they fix it?
I can't remember ever hearing it again, but it must have. I mean, it was right at the top of the peak of the roof, so I suppose the wood structure was a bit rotty. I don't know. It'd be interesting to know if it's been repaired and it's still ringing.
It would be good if you could tell me the name of your parents and if you recall what they did at the time.
Well, my father was a coach builder, and this is why we came to Loughborough. I think the Willowbrook Bus Company were up the Derby Road. They're not there now. I've looked on Google Earth and it's something else. Mother was, she was adopted. She was... came from Wales, I think, but I don't really know. That bit is a mystery, and it's too late now to ask her about it. But walking home from school, we lived in Paget Street, which is barely a mile away from the school. We could play with marbles in the street and dinky toy racing cars, because there weren't any vehicles of any sort in those days, really. What there were, the baker used to come up, stop outside the house with his horse-drawn van, and there was a pub at the corner of the street. I think it was a Paget Arms, it may still be there, and the baker would go for a pint, and the horse would stay outside our house until he came out of the pub. And the horse would wander across and pick him up. Oh, fabulous. You don't get that these days. And
You said we played in the street with dinky toys and things. Did you have any brothers and sisters?
My brother was about 5 or 6 years younger than me. I mean, the other children in the same age group. My grandparents, let's go back, they came from Chelmsford, Broomfield Lane, Chelmsford, and the grandfather was a millwright, so he had a large windmill model in his garden. It was about 5 or 6 feet high, as I remember it, and he kept bees, so at breakfast time we'd have a honeycomb. And the little thing, I could lean out of our bedroom window in the cottage and pick a plum off the wall-hanging tree. Lovely. The other thing about that particular spot was just the other side of a farm. There was a gate at the end of Broomfield Lane, and Marconi had a shed there for his early radio experiments.
Were you ever in the shed?
Oh no, we didn't go in. We didn't go in there. It was outside the area. Yeah. And later on, of course, I attended Loughborough College Secondary School, and I'd had rheumatic fever, so I wasn't allowed to play. I wasn't allowed swimming, and I wasn't allowed to play games at that time. So when they were building the what is now the Cambridge University, what do you call it? The running track. Can't think of the name. Oh, I was into earth moving, pushing wheelbarrows. I was strong enough to do that, but not swim. Yeah. And the other thing about that is, since we lived quite close to the playing fields, I was asked, I suppose, to cycle there first thing in the morning and take the meteorological readings, hot and cold, maximum, minimum temperatures, rainfall, the hours of sunshine. And these were given to the Loughborough Echo, who published it once a week. That was interesting.
So that was while you were at secondary school?
Yes.
Yeah. What subjects were you good at? What subjects did you enjoy at school?
Actually, geometry was the subject, and of course, find this in the later life where it really came in handy, because when I left the school, I went to work with Tellercraft Aeroplanes at Thurmaston, and I spent a little time with Armstrong Whitworth Coventry, and then some time with Scottish Aviation up in Prestwick. And whilst I was in Scottish Aviation, the office was at the end of the runway. And one day, the single Pioneer and the twin Pioneer came out, stood at the end of the runway, facing across the runway, and they both took off and flew. It's hard to believe this, but they flew backwards over the office in an extremely strong onshore wind. So although they were flying forwards in the wind, they were actually going backwards on the over the earth. It was absolutely ridiculous things to see, but it happened. And from there, I joined Masters of Cambridge. And this is where the geometry comes in. Eventually, I became Chief Lossman at Marshalls, which is laying a full-scale layout for tools of aircraft frames and geometry of moving bits. And eventually, because it got so busy and complex, I strongly recommended the use of CAD, which I'd heard about but not seen, and actually we were lucky enough to see it introduced into the office. And now, of course, there are no drawing boards whatsoever. Sir Arthur Marshall was so impressed with the technology, we were shown off the top people who visited, and the toppest person was the King Hussein of Jordan, the short, jolly chap, a wonderful man, and Prince Edward Prince Michael of Kent, Bishop of Ely, Mrs. Thatcher, various other people. As to Burwell, when we moved to Burwell, we moved to Oak Farm in North Street, and that's still there. I've checked that on Google Earth. Yeah, you asked me earlier on, what do I remember of going to Burwell? Well, there was a railway bridge to actually steam trains running backwards and forwards. Good old days. And they even had a windmill here, of course, which my association with my grandfather in Chelmsford, I knew about windmills. And we often used to go to Woodhouse Eaves, where there was a wooden windmill, the same as his model. Yeah. Great. The windmill wasn't working. Is it working now, the Burwell windmill?
It is, yes.
Ah, good. Yeah. Oh, yes, you asked, how did I get involved in the museum? Well, it was John Wisby was the influence, I think, because we had... Oak Farm had the... let's see, there's a word for it, accoutrements, I think. The barn next door, we called Swan Barn. And John Wisby designed the conversion for us, and we moved across into Swan Barn. As to working in the museum, I used to go... I used to like to go into the forge because they got a sack weighing machine, and I zeroed it, and then I could weigh the visitors as they came in. So I spoke their weight. Well, some of them didn't like their weight spoken, but it worked a treat. It was something to do, and association with the visitors. Yeah. The other thing I did, I painted the plaster model of the boat. Of the barn owl, it is up in the top. It was in the far corner, right at the top. Somebody got a plaster model and asked me to paint it as a barn owl. And I also created a lump of ham for the shop. Is the little shop still there?
It is. Yeah.
And I gave them some tops and whips for their window. That's a thing you can't do these days. Children can't play whip and top in the street, which we used to be able to do. Yeah. Oh, yes, the other thing I did, they had a propeller, an air screw, a wooden air screw, and I found a large poster of a Hawker Hind biplane, and that's up on the wall of the stairs. I also donated some very old car maintenance books and two volumes of early Cambridge, which is now all houses. It's near the aerodrome, on the Cambridge side of the aerodrome. It used to be fields. Yes. I knew it when it was fields. I did a painting for some chappy retired who was heavily involved in the museum, and I did a painting of the museum and the little shed at the side. Can't remember his name.
Can I take you back? Yeah. And you said that you went to work for Marshalls.
Yes.
Can you remember how you got that job, what your interview was or anything about?
When I left Osters, there were several people at Osters who had moved to Marshalls, because Marshall had a scheme in order to get increase his design office. He had a scheme of paying a certain amount towards the housing, and three or four of my Oster aircraft or Telegraph aeroplane company associates moved in, and I think through them I applied and came down and got a job there. And then the chief draftsman, who I'd also known at Taylorcraft Aeroplanes, he became chief draftsman at Marshall's, and he knew of my layout experience. So he promoted me to full-scale layout, and that was that gave me some very interesting work. I think one of the first jobs I did remember doing there was a latch for King Haile Selassie's aeroplane, which was an airspeed ambassador. And went in there and it just smelt of lions, because he used to have pet lions in his aircraft. And later on we did the... TSR2 frames for Vickers Armstrongs. And I also did the geometry for the in-flight refuelling probe, which was retracted into the fuselage and came out and went forward. And that was a complex layout business, and it had its geometrical puzzles. I remember getting such a state one day, I'm not getting anywhere. I went to walk around the aerodrome to get, leave it to the subconscious mind to sort out, and I sorted it.
Many of the people who will listen to this won't have any idea of what a layout draftsman job is. Do you think you could describe in layman's terms what it was you did and what how it applied to aircraft?
It's difficult, isn't it? But the people in Burwell may have seen the C-130 meteorological aircraft flying over, and it had a long probe out the front, which was a very slow cone, and that had to be fed into the fuselage. And that's one of the jobs I did, is fairing this cone into the fuselage, the nose of the aircraft. So, difficult to imagine, you think the thing. It's such an odd-looking aircraft. I've got photographs here to show you. What else did we do?
So when you say you did that, what exactly did you have to do? Were you in a lab? Were you in a big space? Were you on a drawing board?
The draftsmen worked on a drawing board, which they could elevate to a more comfortable position. But the size of the drawings that we did were a minimum 8 foot by 4 foot, and they had to be horizontal, and it was metal. We drew originally on metal with 9H pencils. That's how we did the TSR2 frames. And I had to take those down to Weybridge, Vickers Armstrongs at Weybridge. Of course, at that time, it was known as the 571, because it was a desperately hush-hush aircraft. I mean, it hadn't been for the dreaded Labour government, that we'd have had it, instead of which it was cancelled and we bought the some American thing instead. Terrible. What else?
So you actually drew onto the metal the shape that would eventually be cut out
bodywork. Printed by a lithographic process. Well, that was the original. And then plastics came in. We drew on plastic. And then that was photographically printed down onto metal. And then, of course, that became too slow and too large. Oh, yeah, because of the Falklands dispute, when we needed tankers, the C-130 Hercules aircraft became the tankers. But even with overload tanks in the fuselage, they didn't have enough fuel to get down to the Falklands, so they had to have tanker following a tanker. And they were the tanks were so big that we had to. I said we would have filled the drawing office with our loft tables. So we had to go to CAD, computer aided design, and I recommended getting. Well, there was a firm in Cambridge then that just started computer aided design, and it was all very mysterious stuff. So I went down there with Rory Gates, the chief designer, and we had a demonstration. And then we had we started with two screens. Then that quickly went to four screens. Then it went to six screens, and then we had a special office built for a quiet office alongside the main office. and the plotter was 8 foot by 12 foot, and that was in a separate building. So we did our drawings on the screen. They put onto tape, taken across to the Gerber plotter and printed down. And actually, number two son, who's just gone shopping, he came in to do that job for a short time. He cut one of the methods out. Instead of printing onto foil, plastic sheet, and then photographically printing it onto the metal, he drew it straight onto the metal, and of course it saved a lot of time.
What was Marshalls like as a company to work for?
Oh, it was it was good. A lot of people didn't like it, but I can still feel it today. I've got to be doing something. You didn't have time to sit about and chat and say something and the other thing. Everything was wanted immediately. In fact, I had a phrase in those days, people would come and say, "Can you do this for me?" I said, "Yes, on Thursday." And they said, "Thursday?" I said, "Yes, not next Thursday, the Thursday after." Confusion. But it was high speed, it was pressure. And I can, as I say, I can still feel the pressure to do things. I'm too old to do things now, but the pressure's still there. Oh, yeah, going back, right back to Taylorcraft aeroplanes, we heard the first of the British jets, which was a Gloucester Whittle jet aircraft, and then it flew over the aerodrome one day, and everybody went out to hear this strange noise. We couldn't see anything because we were looking where the noise was, and the aircraft, now we know, the aircraft was a mile or so in front, but it was an interesting... Because they were at, I think it took off from Desford, the other side of Leicester. They used to occasionally ask for volunteers to do, for ballast, for the new aircraft. And an air ministry man came up one day, and four people, we want three passengers, so I volunteered. I'd never been in an Oster, but never flown before. And he went up and he did climbing turns. And eventually we broke through the low clouds. And he says, he turned around and he said, "I've done climbing turns before and the aircraft had flipped straight over on the back." I said, "Now he tells me." Another incident from Oster days. We had Ranald Porteous was the test pilot. And... the basic Taylorcraft aeroplane was a 36 foot wingspan, and it was really too much wing to do aerobatics, so they cut 3 feet off the wing, and this of course gave Ranald Porteous, made it aerobatic, and he invented the avalanche, which was difficult to explain, but it was a sort of tumbled out of the air. And he'd think, it's never going to make it. And he'd do this at lunchtime. We'd be out on the aerodrome walking about. And we'd see this thing doing the avalanche, and he'd just pull out virtually the last minute. And that was his thing.
Where was it? This was...
It was at Rearsby.
This was before Marshalls, yes.
Oh, it was before Marshalls, yes. You keep asking me to go back, and I've just come back.
It's okay.
They recently had, I think it was last year, they had a big celebration at Rearsby Aerodrome, which is now not an aerodrome, it's an industrial park.
Had you met your wife by the time you moved to Marshalls?
Oh, yeah, I met Edna. I used to have to get to Thurmaston, where Taylorcraft aeroplanes were, they were in a... at the back of Crowther's engineers, and in order to get there, I had to get down to the Loughborough station, the LMS station, catch a train to Syston, and then walk from Syston to Thurmaston, because there weren't any suitable buses in those days. No, nothing like firm's transport. And I found that Edna had got a job at a firm about half a mile further on, and she wasn't very happy. And we needed tracers, and she'd been a tracer at Herbert Morris, Loughborough. So I got her, an appointment, and she got the job, and she eventually became a draftswoman. So then, of course, we travelled together from Syston to, well, from Loughborough to Syston, and then from we walked from Syston to Thurmaston. Then we bought a caravan, because you couldn't get houses in those days. And we finished up on a farm about a mile from the aerodrome up Gadsby Lane. And we used to cycle down down to work and back at lunchtime. And one of the colleagues in the office said, I feel sorry for you two people having to cycle back to a cold, you know, caravan. I said, look, what we have for lunch, we have the sweet first, it's cold, then we have a main meal, then we have coffee. What do you have? And we had a dog in those days as well. So we fed the dog, and while Edna got the food, and while we had the sweet, the dinner was cooking. So, we were living better than they were in the canteen, because food, it was wartime, of course. Canteen food was the best thing, was oxtails. They occasionally get oxtail. But what I couldn't understand is when we left the office to go to the canteen, I could always smell fish and chips. Whether they had fish and chips or not, I could always smell it. So it sort of got your juices going.
How far was it to cycle?
Oh, it was about half a mile, perhaps a mile, but it was all right going back to, because we, you know, with a full stomach, it was downhill, so it was easy. Yeah.
So this was during the war?
During the war, yeah, the 40s, yeah.
Was it by chance that you sort of went into aircraft?
Oh, I chose to go into aircraft. I really would like to have gone to de Havilland's aeronautical school, but that was Hatfield, and that was, you know, too far away. There was a question of earning some money, so telegraphed aeroplanes. And whether the R-101 airship was part of the instilling into me aircraft, this is a thing or not, I don't know. But the other thing, when we lived at in Shelthorpe, going back to Shelthorpe days, and I was quite a wee lad, an aircraft, a biplane, landed in a field just behind us at the side of the Central Railway. And I went to see it with our other chums. And I remember seeing, looking under the wing, there's the aileron movement. And I know now it was a differential aileron system, so it goes down more than it comes up. And I couldn't understand this lever on a disc, but years later I realised what it was. But I was obviously interested in mechanisms. In the other thing, I had a pedal car, you know, the little pedal cars, and just outside the house was a letterbox. I used to go round this letterbox, and I couldn't understand. I must have seen photographs of Brooklands. I couldn't understand why, when I went round the letterbox, I didn't go that way round. I fell out. Also, at the end of the street where the letterbox was, it went into open fields, and we used to go up there, and there was a big pond. And I told my parents about this, and they said, no, there's not. But when my brother was married, we met an old lady who lived just a little way off. And she said, I remember it well. And there was a hospital, not a leper hospital, but that sort of thing, you know, to be in isolation. And it was a sort of way out in the fields. And I remember that. I suppose that's all houses now. I've looked at Burwell on the Google map, and oh God, I couldn't go back there.
When you moved to Marshalls, you said that part of the package was they helped you with a house.
Yes, in Gunning Way, Cambridge. That's where we finished up. And next door was a colleague, and he left Marshalls and went to New Zealand, and then he went over to America, and then I lost touch with him.
Can you describe that house? Was it?
Oh yes, it was. Yeah, it's still there. I looked up, checked that out on Google Earth as well. Yeah, it's a nostalgic trip, Google Earth. You could see trees growing in the garden where, you know, huge trees that were there. Nothing like that was there when I was. It was a lovely. I remember doing one thing. It was a lovely orangey red brick, and you can go along to Gunning Way, you'll see it. And what annoyed me was the vent pipe was black. And you could see it sticking up above through the garage, and I got some orange and brown paint, and I camouflaged it. It was just odd daubs of paint. And when I went to Google Earth to look at it, some idiot had painted it black. Now, what is it? What is it about people that drain pipe, gutter pipe, drain pipes, and vent pipes have got to be black? These are grey. These are grey plastic, but most houses they're proud of their pipes. Can't understand it.
When did the family come along? When did your boys?
Boys. Well,
is that while you were in Cambridge?
Gunning Way. Yes. It was. Both of them were born when we were in Gunning Way, and. They went into and they went to the nursing home because she was knocking on a bit in the they like to get women, children young, and we didn't start young, so she went to the what's that main road out of Cambridge to Royston? There's a nursing home there. I can't remember what it. Anyway, she had a baby there. And I could have been at the birth, but my mother came over from Loughborough. I went to fetch her. And so she went to see the newborn, and I brought her back. And had she not been there, I could have stayed. I could have gone over and stayed. But I remember going to see the second and coming back and back from Cambridge, and I drove twice around Cambridge Marketplace. I went for the second time. What am I doing here? I was so bemused by the whole event. I thought, perfectly safe, of course, but it's just that I just kept turning right and right. Daft things you do.
What was the reason for moving to Burwell, or choosing to move to
Burwell? We moved from Cambridge. We had the two boys there, we moved to Swaffham Prior. We wanted a quieter place, and Swaffham Prior had an infant school, and we saw in the advert a development called the Stables, the Loose Boxes, the Barn, and that's right. You can see that it's next to the pub on the corner of the hill, Swaffham Prior. What's the name of the place? The Hill. And the little group of buildings is still there. And we had the Stables. What was next door? The Granary was next door. That's right. And we still convert, we still get Christmas cards from the people in the Granary, They live somewhere near Nottingham now. But, well, I say we, I do.
Were they new builds or were they converted?
No, it was a conversion. Yeah. And the architect lived in the house next door. I think it was Kent House. And that's where the editor of the Swaffham Crier lives now. The Mathesons, which is a Scottish name. They've got connections up here. Yeah, so both the children went to Swaffham Prior School. In fact, we planted a tree there, which eventually got too big. They had to lop it, I think. I remember being there when they laid the main drainage in Swaffham Prior, and I wrote a song for them. The WI did a show, or the village did a show, and I wrote this song about mud. They were based on those pianist chaps. I can't think of his name. Mud, glorious mud. And unfortunately, I can't find the... I thought I kept all my verses and songs and things, but I can't find that one. But the WR may still have it in their archives. The other thing we did whilst we were at Swaffham Prior, Edna joined the WI, and there was a project to make kneelers for the church, and I've got photographs of them. They were so boring, the patterns, that the WI said, "Can't you do something better than this?" So I did a printed the canvas of the two churches, the village sign. And we had a dog. We were in Burwell then. We had a dog, which I'll show you a painting of in the next room. And she did that. And that's kept in for special occasions. And the other... Oh, yes, I did one of the... just more photographs. I used a piece of paper to wipe my palette knife on. And it came in the form of a cross. So one Easter, I made that into a cross on the hill, and it was a good, made it a brilliant cross, and put three black crosses in the distance. And that's still in the Swaffham Prior Church.
You were doing drawing or layout draftsman, so you were painting and things as a hobby?
Oh, yeah, I painted. I started painting because we had him, Jerry Coulson, who's now a famous painter. That's one of his originals. And I took a photograph of a traction engine on Midsummer Common, and I showed it to him, and he did a painting of it. He took it down to Frost and Reed, the printers, and they bought it from him. They said, "This is going to make your name." he'd swapped it for a camera, but he borrowed it back from the owner, and Frost and Reed had offered him so much money for it. In those days, it was something like £70, which was a lot of money. He swapped, and of course he had to come back and tell this chap he'd sold the painting. Anyway, that's a painting that Jerry gave me. Jerry was the... He became the artist, the chief artist in Marshalls, and I used to write verses about if anything happened that was worth happening, worth noting in the office. I wrote a verse about it, and Joe would do a painting or drawing of it. And there's one there, which I'll show you later. We did Tennessee Gas, the Viscount. They owned Viscounts. And they bought one. Tennessee Gas is an American, obviously, petrol company. They bought one of these, and they wanted it for their directors to travel about. So they wanted a bar. And that was given to a small group in the office, and they built this bar. But they didn't check that it went through the door. The first is, "Dear Sirs of Tennessee Gas, There's a fault with your aircraft, alas. We've built you a bar, this is the biggest by far, but the doorway won't let it pass. We suggest, that is, if we may, we build you a freight door, if you pay. Failing that, there's a chance, if they gave it a glance, Lockheed would have it for the C-5A. I gave it to Jerry and he did a drawing of it. I'll show you, it's just there. And we gave a print of the drawing to the woodworking people who'd built the bar. And the Tennessee Gas directors came and saw this and they, oh, can we have that? Texas Gas Company's managing director's dining room. But we did lots of things like that. Yeah.
So you wrote verse. You didn't actually do painting yourself.
Well, not until Jerry started. I said, until Jerry said, I could teach you to paint. He says, but you do it. I won't teach you how to paint. You do it, and I'll criticise it, and then you can alter it. And that's the one I did. I did for somebody in the office who worked at the Isle of Wight, Saunders Row, Princess Flying Boat. And this chap said, I want a Princess Flying Boat. No, first of all, he said, I want an aircraft. So what do you want? I want a Focke-Wulf triplane. Is it Focke-Wulf? No, it's not. I don't think it's Focke. The triplane, anyway, that von Richthofen had. So I did him a thing about that size on paper, quick watercolour, and he took it home. But his wife was German, and she says, we're not having that. So he came back and says, I can't have it. So, well, what do you want? Well, I want a Spitfire then. So I did him a Spitfire, once again on paper, and just a quick... And then his wife says, we're not having that. He said, well, it's a warplane. So he came back and he says, what I really want is a Saunders Row Princess Flying Boat. Because he said, I was an apprentice when that... So he gave me a photograph of the sit, like that. And I got an inch to the mile map of the area, surround, sublant. And a colleague of mine was then working there. I said, if the buildings are as they are, give me an air-to-ground shot of the building. So I did that. And when I finished it, I showed it to Jerry, and he said, yeah, that's fine. You can lighten the sky a bit. I did that. And he says, you've got the river right, that's right. And I thought... Too many houses. I put some clouds up, and So that's one of the things. Oh, that's one of Jerry's. That print. That's a windmill on the Broads.
So you've continued to paint yourself over the years.
Bulldog, British Bulldog, Bristol Bulldog that particular number, it flew at Farnborough and had a major engine failure and crashed, written off. The crew were all right, but the pilot was okay, but the aircraft was a write off. And that, I just wanted to paint a vintage aircraft. During the war, I saw one similar to that, but the one with that's got three fins. There was one with a single fin, similar make to that, virtually floating over Loughborough. Must have been in all of 60 mile an hour. And I presume it was heading in the direction of Coventry, ready to be dismantled and built into garden fences, or perhaps Spitfires. Yeah.
So, in terms of you're now in Swaffham Prior, When did you actually lived in Burwell at one point?
Well, we moved from Swaffham. We were in Cambridge, Gunningway, Cambridge, and we saw this advert for development. So we moved to Swaffham Prior. It was a friend of Edna's said that there's a lovely little cottage for sale in Swaffham Prior. So, of course, being an obedient husband, we moved. And then we stayed there for a while, about 6 years, I think. The children eventually left there, left the school, went to Newmarket School.
About what year did you move to Burwell?
Do you want it now? I've got it in the book.
Just roughly, it was.
I don't know. In the 60s, I suppose. We're talking about moving. I can't remember any of these moves. We were in a different house and putting stuff out. And I can't remember the actual going bit. It's something you get rid of, I think. If it goes well, you don't want to know, so it's wasted.
What are your earliest recollections of Burwell itself?
Burwell? Oh, not a lot. In the next room, there are portraits of pictures of the dogs we had. And the first dog we had was Edna's dog. It was a Norfolk Terrier. And would you believe, he got on the bus that Edna got on and went down to the station and came back on, and then it became my bus and my dog. And when we lived in the caravan at Risby, the farmer, we were on a farmer's field, and the farmer said, I borrowed your dog, he says, for a while. I saw a rat in the shed. The tractor shed, and I borrowed your dog, hope you don't mind, and caught him. So that evening we were sitting outside, and as you do in the warm weather, and the farmer went by and he said, it's all right for some. By the way, he says, I saw another rat in the tractor shed. And when the farmer came back, we had six rats laid out on a slab. Took the lot. He'd taken seven because the dog, insisted on burying the first rat, and from then on he just killed them, and that was it. I used to take. We moved from there. We moved to Quenneborough, and I used to take him a walk up the road. There's the council tip. And of course there were rats everywhere, and I used to have a stick, and I found the first hole and I probed towards the second hole, and I said, you sit there, boy, and I probed towards it, and the rat would pop out in the next hole, and the rat boy would get it and take it off. I thought, right, this is fine, but we'll get science to aid. So I got some 35mm inflammable film one day and put it on the down, and I lit it, and stay there, boy. And I lit it and put my foot on it. Six rats came out, and you could see the expression on the dog's face. You burk. You could see it. You think dogs are just dogs, but the expression on his face was wonderful. You stupid. We had a dog given to us when we were in Burwell. She was found on towards Royston somewhere on an airfield, wandering about. And the girl who found her couldn't keep a dog, so she gave it to us. And I used to take her onto Burwell playing field, and there the local golfers. Amateur golfers used to practice losing their ball, and Suki would leave me and dive into the ditch and go scrabbling about and come out with a golf ball and drop it at my feet and go off No. Here's another one. And I told this to a colleague in the office at Marshall's then. And he says, well, if there's any of them are any good, they're not cut or anything, I'll buy them from you, 50 pence a piece. So I sorted him out a dozen, and it paid for Suki's hotel for a week. £5 in the hotel at in the Norfolk coast somewhere, Wells next to sea, I think it was. But the oddest thing of all, Jonathan, my number two son, had a lurcher, and we looked after it for a week. And I used to take the lurcher, which was quite a high tall dog, down, and she would run about the field, and she'd find the golf balls that the golfers had just left, lying about, not in the ditch. She wasn't going to go into the ditch. She found the ones that were lying on, and she'd bring them to me as well. And, Suki must have taught the other dog how to do it. What he likes, bring golf balls. Fantastic. Yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah, and give you the whole list of moves now. Sort of from prior, the stables, 1964, October the 23rd. Burwell, Oak Farm, North Street, 1968, August the 2nd. Burwell Swan Barn, North Street, that's just across the garden, in effect, the drive, 1984, September the 6th. Swaffham Prior, this was called Wuthering Heights. The bungalow was called Wuthering Heights because it's up on the... So I took off the and were and called it Heights. 1996, and then we moved from there. We swapped it with Paul, number one son, who was living in 11 Trinity Close, and he wanted to get married, so he wanted more space, so we swapped. We went to Fordham in his house, and he came to Swaffham Prior. We went to Trinity Close, 1998, and then... I didn't like Fordham much. We came here in 2003, August the 22nd.
That's quite a leap to come all the way to Skye.
Well, we came really to support Jonathan. I'll show you. Jonathan's invented when he came up here a long while ago. He spent 9 years up here in Burnisdale, which is about 6 miles down the road. And we used to come up 2 or 3 times a year, and I like the place, the island. It's busy. It's quiet. And so I thought, when I retire, I'll go there. And we came here really to support Jonathan's bicycle saddle, because Scottish Highland Enterprise Board were interested in it, but then the committee changed and they forgot all about it. But it's in the next room. You must see it. It's a bicycle saddle to end all bicycle saddles. You wouldn't believe it is. In fact, he sent one to a request from Tokyo, and they x-rayed it. They thought it was a suit of body armour, but it's entirely different. And it's the Manta. It's called Manta because it's a series of levers that move, like the manta ray fish. So there's no more pressure than sitting on a chair, as you've got now. And it's ventilated, so you don't get sweats. And as there's no pressure, it doesn't restrict the blood flow, which is one of the problems that people have cycling. Very few will admit it, but they will. It's a pain. It's a real pain. With this, there's no pain. But I'm afraid the cyclist fraternity, in this country at least, is all for high saddles and low handlebars. And that's not the way to cycle at all. The Dutch have got the right idea. the Dutch are buying old English bicycles. They sit up on bed and they're enjoying the riding. All was going quite well in this business, and they were beginning to sell, and then somebody in Huntingdon got on to the fact that we needed to push it, and they said, I can do this. So we offloaded this, well, Jonathan offloaded, and he failed miserably. He didn't do anything. Words can't describe him. But we're beginning to come back. And it was invented up here because Jonathan used to cycle in Burnersdale all round. You know, you can go anywhere. And it used to be painful. And Jonathan thought, this is not the way to do it. A reclining bike is the way to do it. But he made a reclining bicycle, but he didn't like it. It's sort of, you know, you're down here, you're out of sight of motor cars. And motorists don't like cyclists, so you need to be sitting up. One more possibly interesting thing that's not generally known is I'm a dowser. I douse, and I've doused several things at in Burwell, and one and Perkins, Stuart Perkins, who lived in North Street just along from us, asked me to give him a talk to the Rotary Club, an after dinner talk on dowsing. And so, yeah, I'll do that. So I went along there and had dinner in some, I don't know where it was, hotel, I think. And I gave a talk. And there was some character in the front row. Of course, you had to be in the front row. He says, what a load of codswallop. I don't believe a thing. And so Stuart Perkins says, it's not codswallop. I can do it myself. He took my fork and he showed this idiot that, you know, that it did work. It does work. It works better than a lot of others. But the policy these days is if it hasn't got a dial and with a battery attached, a couple of wires and a battery, then it's no good at all. It's not technology. But dowsing works. And I showed this chappy that, first of all, his cigarette was negative. The beer he was drinking was negative. It wasn't going to do him any good at all. And he kept quiet after Stuart Perkins told him. But Stuart had used it. He was dowsing for everything. But the most interesting job I did, really, was when we got CAD in the office at Marshall's, the company secretary thought we could do everything. He thought we could build a model of Bournemouth Aerodrome, because he was writing a book about the Honourable Charles Rolls, who was killed an accident. Well, he died as a result of an accident in Bournemouth Aerodrome, where they had a centenary and they're flying. They had all the old biplanes, and I think Honourable Charles had a grey and white biplane, but he had modified it. He'd put an elevator at the front as well as the one at the back. And he was flying over the had to land in a circle, get as close to this large circle as possible. And he came in and he pulled on the stick, and the audience could hear the crack. Something broke, and Charles Rolls crashed. And as a result, as I say, he died. And the secretary, Marshall's secretary, had been down there. It's now a school playing field. He'd been down there, and he said the plaque that tells us where the crash is in the wrong place. Now, and the clue is, where was the starters' box? Because they had a high box about 12 foot square, and they could see the starting line and the finishing line was dead in line with this box. And he says, if we could find the box, the site of the box, we could pinpoint the actual spot where the crash occurred. So I said, well, I've got a week's holiday coming up. Can't do it on the screen, although I've got maps, old maps, and I superimposed the old map on the new map on the screen. Still can't really pinpoint it. I'll go down there and I'll douse it. So we had a week's holiday and we went down there. And I got my fork and walked down what was presumably the edge of the aerodrome, because it's all houses here and houses here. And I walked down the edge of the aerodrome and suddenly I got a reaction. And then a bit further along I got another reaction. So I put Suki's golf balls down to mark the spot. And then eventually I got the square. But the odd thing was, this is a square. There was a wall here and trees and then houses. So I wasn't actually walking down the boundary of the aerodrome. I was walking inside the boundary of the aerodrome. And I discovered that the size of the area that I discovered, there wasn't any sign of it. You're supposed to have a crop sign, but I couldn't see anything. The size was right, and it was presumably on the edge of the aerodrome. But what I discovered was that the developers of the houses had actually moved the boundary about 2 metres inside the playing fields of the school. Very naughty. And while we were there, the owner of one of the houses came out, he presumably says, "Are you from the council?" I said, "No, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, we're looking for something." Well, he said, "It's not right." He says, "I was told that these trees were at least a yard away from the boundary wall, and they're not. They're right against the boundary wall." Well, He was talking from his point of view, which was quite wrong. As I say, he got more garden than he should have had. Anyway, I gave the results to the secretary, and they produced a book. But that was the most interesting thing I've done. Dowsing, I think. I did a house in Newmarket. The lady complained to another friend of mine who was a crystal healer, and a crystal healer wanted to know how to douse. So I showed her, and then this other lady said, "There's something wrong with my house. Could Ofer help discover what was wrong? There's something, it just irritates me." So I expected to find water underneath the house. I said, "Well, give me a sketch of the plan of the house and I'll see what I can find." And in fact, you can do map dowsing. I found two streams, negative streams, under the house. I found out how to cure them, and I went over there with the crystal healing lady and did the dowsing, and found the streams were where I said they were. And then you can actually spike them with iron spikes, and it kills stream between the two spikes. And I did that twice, and one of the streams went straight through the from front to back of the house, and the other went through the underneath the kitchen. So I'm not surprised that she didn't. She was irritated by it, but couldn't explain it. And I had this crystal dowser lady check, because if I'd have done it, I'd have been convinced that I'd cured it. But the crystal lady checked it, and much to my amazement and her surprise, we cured it. But she says, "For goodness sake, don't tell my husband, because he's a doctor and he doesn't believe in such things." But the other thing is, a colleague in the office at Marshall said, "Would you come and douse my house?" He says, "I've got water coming up through the carpet in the lounge." So I went there, and I expected to find a stream running under the house, but there was water everywhere, even down his drive, underwater. And in those two books I've given to Burwell Museum, you can see where his house is. in the ground, there's two streams. And I think when they developed it, they must have blocked the streams. So they are earth drainage, but they've been blocked, so the water levels rising. So I advise him to get rid of this house, go somewhere else, quit. But it's an interesting business.
So have you got any scientific theories about the dowsing?
I've read lots of books. I haven't got any scientific theories. I've read lots of books, including one, 1926, and nobody can explain it. Even, you know, you've got top scientists there. It can't... There's one in this book, in this bookcase here, a big one, about American... It's an Englishman writing, but mainly about Americans. They used it for finding oil. The American army used it for finding underground dumps in the Vietnam War. And, you know, the top brass didn't believe it, but the soldiers do use it, and they actually did it. And it's a mental thing. They think it's something to do with magnetism of whatever affects the mind, tunes into it. But it's a fascinating business. But God, nobody has explained it properly yet. I'm supposed to call, other than saying it's a mental thing. But yeah, interesting. There's a place in Burnersdale. I belong to the U3A now, University of the Third, and the place in Burnersdale where they expected to find Viking remains. And I did some dowsing there. I found a kist, which is a single slab grave, but they haven't dug that one yet, but they have dug another one, some previously. They found an axe head, but we went last year, because Edna was in a Portree nursing home, I think, home anyway, so I could go on Fridays and Saturdays, or Saturdays and Sundays. And they did find an axe head, and they found an old wine bottle, very thick, but it didn't have any wine in, unfortunately. And we found the diggers found a stove, and a cast iron stove. I wrote a little verse about that. But I was dowsing it really on the map, because I'm too old to dig. And unfortunately, it might be coming up to this year, about the same June, July time, when we went back there, the U3A team went there to dig, so we might be going there back again this year, and I want to have a look at that kist.